good morning to you, and you may approach. We've got a few people coming in and out of the courtroom, so let's give them some time to do that. Proceed.
All right. I'd like to thank you. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of rebuttal time if I could. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jordan Adams. I represent the appellant in this case, Genevieve Franke. We're here today. This is a conservatorship case originating out of the Hall County Court, an opinion from Judge Wetzel out there. This is Judge Wetzel at the end of a four-day trial entered a permanent conservatorship order on behalf of my client, Mrs. Franke. Genevieve Franke actually passed away during the pendency of this appeal. She died on December 31st, 2014. At the time of her death, she was 90 years old. She was living in a nursing home due to some physical ailments that she was having. When she died, she left three children.
Let me interrupt you, Mr. Jordan, or Mr. Adams. What authority do you have to represent the deceased?
In this case,
my understanding is you're not there's no PR appointed.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So where's your grant of authority to represent Genevieve, a deceased person?
Right. And Justice Connolly, it's not in the record. There is another matter that is proceeding that is outside of this case by a county court judge that has authorized me to pursue this appeal on behalf of Mrs. Franke in this case.
Okay, go ahead.
Where do we find that?
Well, it's not a part of this record. It's out in the county court, Howard County.
Well, shouldn't the PR be representing Genevieve?
I don't know that that there's a personal representative that has been appointed in this case. There's a trust matter that is pending that is not actually a part of this case.
Well, wouldn't the death of your client sever the attorney-client relationship?
Well, and that's why I tried to dismiss this appeal, Your Honor. In the Court of Appeals, I moved to dismiss this appeal several months ago. That appeal was overruled, and the appeal was allowed to go forward. And the reason that I appealed or that I moved to dismiss this appeal is because it's a moot question at this point in time, because her death has made this conservatorship case moot, and a conservator action abates upon the death of the ward. And so I moved.
You're saying that it's moot and it abates the action as if the court never determined that she needed a conservatorship.
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor. And that's what this court has actually found. The Sherman versus Neff case is right on point with this court, that the Supreme Court held in 2012. Sherman versus Neff involved an administrative revocation of a person's license. And in that case, during the appeal, the person died who was appealing the license revocation. And this court held that based upon his death, that right to have a license was a personal right to the appellant. When he died, that personal right no longer, the action no longer existed.
Well, there was never a sale of the property, is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
So where's the dog in the fight here for you? What do you care if? Why are you seeking to have that conservatorship determination set aside?
Well, I think that's actually that's the law in this case. That's what happens. What this court has said before is that when the case is dismissed, when it is vacated, I mean, it's also vacated. The lower court rule, I mean, well, it abates.
You're relying on Neff, and that was a license suspension, was it not?
That's correct, Your Honor.
But there's other cases and marriage dissolution and probate cases which hold otherwise.
And I thought, it was my understanding, Your Honor, that marriage cases, that Sherman Neff actually found that marriage dissolution cases was, again, a personal right that didn't, you know, abatement type situation. But regardless, the point is, in that Sherman versus Neff case, that I want to point you to some language. This court actually cited with approval and actually quoted verbatim from G versus Bess, which was a Missouri Court of Appeals case from 1939, which I'm sure the court is familiar with. In that case, that involved a conservatorship case as well, similar situation where the appellant died during the appeal. And in that case, which the Supreme Court, which our court cited here, said, an action to determine the competency of a person to manage his affairs abated when the person died during a pending appeal because the action only involved his personal rights. So I think that case, the G versus Best case, which was cited in the Sherman versus Neff case by this court, holds in this case.
But there's a plethora of other cases that hold otherwise.
I'm not aware of that there are, Your Honor. I mean, that's certainly Mrs. Bergen's counsel.
Well, let me ask you this: if the conservator is winding down and taken action and made decisions, and we set aside the conservatorship, what does that do to the conservator who has acted under those powers?
I think that any action that he's taken, and I'll tell you that the only thing that has happened in this case thus far is that an order was entered and there has been an appeal. Since that time, the conservator has been sitting, hasn't been doing anything. The conservator is a bank.
Well, that may be this case, but if we follow your line of logic, what would it do if a conservator had taken action in winding up, paid bills, did things, what a conservator does?
I think that under this type of situation, on the law that other cases have found, there is no permanent conservatorship order. And the actions that have been taken have to be abated.
You're drawing the line at once there's a permanent order that's become final, either because no one took an appeal or the appeal upheld the appointment of a conservator. From that point on, the death of the ward would not abate anything that occurred previously.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, same facts, let's assume there was a temporary conservator appointed. The appeal is pending of the permanent appointment. The ward dies. The temporary conservator has been taking actions in response to the powers that were conferred during the pendency, because the court found there was an emergency and no one really was attacking the existence of the emergency on a short-term basis. Or let's assume they were attacked. What happens? I mean, I think that's the heart of what Judge Connolly was asking you about. We can't really undo those things, can we?
Well, I think that you can, and it's my understanding what you're saying is that you have a temporary conservator who has performed actions,
right,
and then there's an appeal that takes place, and you're trying to review the action that the temporary conservator has taken place.
Well, no, you're trying to determine on appeal whether the county court was correct in appointing a conservator, period.
Right.
Like we are. That's what this was about.
Well, I think that we can agree, first of all, it would be moot at this point in time if somebody had died. So then the issue is whether or not to vacate those remaining orders. And again, that the law that this court has said is that these are personal rights that they have. And this court has said is that once somebody has a personal right and that personal right dies at their death, the action abates. And it's been the law of this court that once the action abates, any action that was, it's like it abated before any orders were even taken.
Does it make sense in the context of a conservatorship? There's many orders and they have different profiles, and one would be the appointment of a conservator, right? That's an order,
right?
And thereafter, there are actions by the conservator to which someone disagrees, right?
Correct.
Aren't those different issues? The appointment might be challenged.
Correct.
And the actions might be challenged.
Correct.
And is the thinking all the same, or do they require a different view?
Well, and maybe that is the distinguishing factor here, is that all that we're asking for is to vacate and dismiss the order of temporary conservatorship. Order. We're not asking for no other rulings. That issue is not before this court as to any of the other functions that a conservator might.
But does this court know that conservator, temporary or permanent, has or has not taken actions which might be impacted?
That is not in the record in this case, because nothing, I mean.
Would it be relevant?
Well, I think that, no, I don't think it would be relevant. I mean, we're talking about an issue about somebody who has passed away, and now, I mean, I don't think the orders go forward.
But I think I'm circling back to Justice Conley's context. If a conservator has done nothing, maybe life is simple, but if the conservator, permanent or temporary, has done a bunch of stuff, would it not matter with respect to those activities and the entities on the receiving end, what the status of those orders were, the viability of those orders, or activities were?
That hasn't been the issue in the other cases. I'm running out of time here, and the other cases have been cited. I have 10 seconds, I don't think I can reserve any time. But I understand what your point is. I still think the law is clear that regardless of whether or not the person, the conservator has taken actions before, the case law is clear that the conservatorship abates upon the death of the appellant.
I realize your time has expired, but do you think there's any statutory protection for third parties that deal with a temporary conservator that would protect, for example, a bank or an insurance company or someone else who's relying on the existence of the temporary conservator's powers? Or do those people simply deal with a temporary conservator at their risk?
Yeah, Your Honor, I apologize. I don't know the answer to that question. I just don't know the answer to that question, whether or not that's in the probate code or not in the conservatorship code. I don't know the answer to that question.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Koenig, good morning to you.
Please support. I am Susan Koenig, and I represent Lori Bergen, who is the petitioner in this case. Mr. Mooney and I are both appellees in this matter, and on discussion, we've agreed that we would share the time and basically have agreed that we'd each have 5 minutes.
Thank you.
I think the facts are fairly clear in this matter in terms of the procedure. Petition was filed, trial was held.
Excuse me, you're representing?
The petitioner, Ms. Bergen.
Is there a personal representative involved?
There is not. Okay. There has not been a personal representative appointed. There is a trust. The trust has been registered in Fillmore County. There is an action pending in Fillmore County at this point.
That was the action to which your opposing counsel referred?
Yes. I think, as far as I know, that's what's pending.
All right. Yes.
The conservator was...
Well, as long as you're referring to an action pending, what kind of an action is it?
It's challenging... changes that were made to the trust during the pendency.
Okay.
Could we take judicial notice of that?
Certainly an action pending in a court of this state. I guess I truly don't know the answer whether this court can, but I would think that you can.
And changes made to the trust by whom?
By Mrs. Frankie. I believe one was in October and one was in December.
No, if I understand, your position that this is moot and that the... No, it's not.
No, my position is not that it is.
Okay, it's not moot, and the conservators... You don't want to set aside the determination of the conservatorship.
We do not.
Okay, I understand.
Why is it not moot?
Well, I think in this instance, there's a statutory scheme that addresses, perhaps not directly, but indirectly, whether or not it's moot. There are some cases that talk about personal rights, and certainly Sherman versus Neth is one of them.
And the scope of that isn't, it doesn't have an ongoing activity, right?
Correct.
Was that an ALR or something?
Right. It was an ALR.
Right. Yeah. Right. It either was... whatever, correctly imposed or not imposed, that's it, one issue. But I think what the questions go to here is, works in a continuum. You get an appointment and that individual who, at least the time being, is a legitimate conservator starts doing stuff and then third parties start relying on that, evidently.
Absolutely.
So it's got legs.
And if you look at the probate code, the guardianship statutes specifically say that on the death of the ward, guardianship terminates. There is not a similar provision in the conservatorship statutes. In fact, in the conservator statutes, there are a couple of references that say specifically the conservator on the death of the protected person has to do certain things or has the authority to do certain things. So there's ongoing action for the conservator to take, and some of those may be fairly limited, including, you know, passing the assets of the estate on to the successor fiduciary. It also requires the conservator to preserve those assets during whatever pendency of any action. And it authorizes the conservator to act as personal representative should no other representative be appointed.
But that would require a request by the court, or a request to the court to be appointed as a personal representative, wouldn't it?
A request to the court?
Yes.
Yes. Right. And the conservator can do that the way right. I read the statute. So the conservator has ongoing power.
It would be one of the individuals or entities that had the power to obtain the appointment of a personal representative to continue the probate proceedings.
Correct.
If the conservator has done nothing other than be appointed and accept and maybe post a bond, why wouldn't the death of the ward moot the issue about whether the conservator should or should not have been appointed?
Well, once the conservator is appointed, and in this instance there's a temporary and there's then a permanent, there are actions taken, as you indicated, and there is reliance. And I think that
I'm asking the question, assuming there's no actions that have been taken, why isn't the whole thing moot at that point?
Because someone still needs to be in charge of the assets. There are still property rights that need to be administered.
If the conservator hasn't taken possession of the property, well, hasn't undertaken to protect the rights of property, I'm positing there's been no action. In that situation, doesn't the action abate and just essentially it becomes totally moot?
Yes, I disagree. I think there are still property rights involved, and those would require attention. Even though they haven't taken action, they would be required.
Shouldn't that be done by the appointment of a PR?
That is an option, but that takes some time. I mean, there's some time in between here. You can't appoint a PR for 120 hours after a person's deceased. So the conservator still has some time that they're responsible for the property.
Can you have a special administration?
There is a special administration, and that can be done more quickly.
And isn't that the logical step, is that once the person is deceased, that conservatorship is the only remaining functions would be to protect any assets or anything else, but the ongoing proceeding would be to appoint a personal representative eventually in the estate to assume those powers and duties.
I'm not saying that the conservator has a long-term obligation here, but there is an obligation. There are property rights that go on beyond the death of the affected person.
And in this case, I realize I'm taking you over time, in this case, what does this record tell us about what this conservator, temporary or permanent, has done to this point in time?
Well, first of all, the letters were limited. The temporary letters were limited to prohibiting the sale of the farm and preserving the assets. So there isn't a whole lot. However, bills were still being paid throughout this. The conservator did file an inventory.
And that appears in our record?
I believe it does. I won't swear that the inventory is in the transcript, but I think it is. And I know there's some reference in the Bill of Exceptions to that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Mooney, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the Court, I hope the Court will allow me an allotment of 5 minutes to speak, even though we're sharing time.
You get the full 5 minutes, and if Mr. Adam needs more time, we'll give him that.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll borrow from Mr. Ash. May it please the court, I represent John Frankie, who is the natural son of Genevieve Frankie, the ward in this case, and we opposed the imposition of a conservatorship at trial, and we take the position that this action abated upon her death. That means that the permanent conservatorship order goes away, never happened.
Was there a will then that would direct the appointment of or name a personal representative?
There was a trust. The trust was mentioned in the record and questioning. In this case, it was not offered into evidence, and that trust is now the subject of a probate proceeding, which has been referenced.
But did she leave a will?
I don't recall whether there was a will that funded the trust or not, in all candor, Your Honor. I think the trust was their estate, was she and her husband's estate planning. So there was a testamentary, or there was a trust that was funded.
Well, I think she did have a will. Wouldn't the will direct who would be appointed as a personal representative?
Yes.
Wouldn't that give that first person authority to proceed immediately upon her death?
It would.
Why didn't that happen?
I can't answer that. I'm not her estate planning counsel. I represent the son. But I want to address mainly the issue.
Well, let me ask you this. The way I see this, you want this thing abated and as if the conservatorship proceedings or the determination never happened.
The final determination.
Because that might give a stigma to your case in this other case.
That has nothing to do with it. The law is, in a personal right, when a conservator, the ward dies pending appeal, action abates.
And you're relying on Sherman v. Neff?
Sherman v. Neff and G versus Bass. And, more importantly, the fact that there is nothing in the survival statutes that allows this action to continue beyond the death of the principal.
It abated at common law and consequently.
Absolutely. This is not a personal injury action where the estate can proceed claim of the individual. There is nothing in the survivor statutes and nothing in the conservatorship statute that specifically says this action continues after the death of the ward. Think of it this way. Had we completed our trial, which took 3 days over about a four-month period because of scheduling issues, we complete our trial, the evidence is submitted, and then prior to the judge issuing his journal entry order 2 months later, she died. Would the judge enter that journal entry? Would it make any sense in going forward and saying, yes, I find that based on the evidence at trial, she needed a conservatorship. No, she's dead. The action abates.
Okay. Assuming that it abates, assuming we buy on with you, it abates as to the personal right of whether there should have been a conservator or not.
Yes.
What do we do about things that have happened in the meantime?
If the conservator has made payments, say, here's an example, they paid the nursing home bill.
Right.
After appointment, tough. The nursing home has to pay it back because that action was without authority because the permanent conservatorship order never happened. What's the nursing home's recourse then? They submit their bill to the estate. But the fact that it's not something I'm suggesting, you know, that you should create new law. It is the law that this action abates. It is personal to her, and there is nothing in the conservatorship statute that says the action continues.
Does the personal representative have to file some kind of an action against the nursing home? The nursing home isn't going to come in and voluntarily say, we got this payment. And I
think that's something that's sorted out within the confines of the estate case.
Is there a distinction between the action abating and the nullification of the activities that the conservator has taken?
Well, I think that, well, you know, the action abates, and the order of this court should be, the opinion should be, this action abates, this order never happened. Reverse and demand with directions to vacate your prior order. Just
this order being the appointment of a permanent conservator. What about the order for appointment of a temporary conservator?
The temporary conservatorship, it acted that anybody who got paid under the temporary conservatorship, any actions the conservator took under that would be under the authority of the court. That's not a final appealable order that you can review. So that's perfectly within the color of the law and under the authority of the court. It's only the permanent conservatorship that abates. And the reason is this, we didn't get a chance to discuss here today all of the problems with the evidence that were offered and the fact that the evidence clearly did not support the appointment of a conservatorship. This was a tactic employed by a potentially disinherited child to block a sale of an asset.
Do we even get to the merits if you're correct on your position?
No. There's no reason to, because if the action abates, then all of the judge's findings in his journal entry go away. doesn't matter whether he committed error after error in appointing a conservator because it never happened.
I beg your pardon, can you repeat, therefore, if the action abates,
and there is
then
no
those activities that took place during the temporary, what's the legal consequence of activities while temporarily?
There's two separate orders, temporary and then permanent. And during the pendency of the temporary conservatorship, conservators acting under the authority of the court act. If she died during the temporary conservatorship, she wouldn't go back and undo any of those actions because it was temporary. The design, obviously, is have a temporary conservatorship and then very quickly on the heels have a hearing and a trial. That didn't happen here. We delayed almost a full year because of the court scheduling and trying to get this report. But practically speaking, I don't think it was an issue because they're acting under the authority of the temporary conservatorship. If the board dies, then the estate.
And the actions that were taken by the temporary conservator, those are effective. Third parties are in good shape.
I would argue they are because they are under the authority of the court. The people have the opportunity to object and have it heard in the court on an urgent basis during the pendency of the action. If a person dies, action abates, it stops.
And what's your best authority?
It sounds like
the distinction between the significance vis-a-vis third parties as to whether or not the conservator was temporary or permanent at the moment he or she did whatever he or she did with the third party.
I do not have any authority to cite to only because I don't think it's come before the court. And the reason being because, again, temporary conservatorship is not a final appeal authority. You never appeal the position of an ex parte temporary order. And if you tried, you'd tell us we couldn't.
It sounds like your position has shifted a little subtly during the course of this argument. It sounded like originally that nothing that took place during the temporary conservatorship would be valid, and now you're arguing that...
Absolutely not. My position is consistent. Nothing that has been done pursuant to permanent conservatorship is valid.
All right.
When she dies, then you all obey the permanent conservatorship position. Things that happened prior to that, under the authority of the court, prior to the trial on the merits, would absolutely be...
All right.
It's kind of like if you go back to Sherman versus Neff, there's a temporary license revocation, and this is a permanent hearing. Permanent hearing, they suspended his license, he appealed, and while that was going on,
that's a one-issue case. I mean, that doesn't proceed over time.
But the other issues that you're concerned about, I'm sorry, I didn't answer your question.
Well, the license revocation, it's either properly imposed or not properly imposed, right? It doesn't have a continuum, and I think what we're exploring is the real-life consequences of addressing the propriety of a conservatorship and the real-life consequences vis-a-vis third parties who may have relied on it, evidently thinking that there were letters and it was okay.
And just to summarize, I think that my position, and it's supported by the cases that we've cited in our brief, is only the permanent conservatorship order would abate, and therefore the concern would only be any actions that have been taken during the pendency of the appeal, however long that process takes. And those people, those third parties, would have a recourse. That is to go against the estate, assuming the personal representative made the decision to dispute those
people. Somebody's got to claw back all this stuff.
Somebody has to claw back, unless the personal representative says, you know what, she lived in a nursing home, and that payment was proper, which is likely what would happen.
And the county court would still have jurisdiction to consider an accounting of the temporary conservator for the acts taken before the appointment of a permanent conservator.
Yes, that's specifically authorized by the statute. There's nothing in the statute that conservatorships, survivorship, like...
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now, is there any time for...
He is over.
Well, in fact, it's probably Ms. Koenig who ought to have some rebuttal time, but that's just not the way things work out, the way we've set them up. So I think we've exhausted our... argument time on this case, and we'll go on to the next case of the day, which is Sulu versus Maganoff.